Have you ever noticed how a small inconvenience, a spilled coffee, a missed text, a traffic jam, can unleash a fury completely disproportionate to the offense? That rage isn't really about the coffee. It's about something far deeper. What if every emotion you feel, from the flash of anger to the pit of despair, is actually a theological statement, a confession about what you believe God will or won't do for you? This is the radical premise at the heart of a work that's been quietly transforming how people understand their inner lives for decades. Rather than treating emotions as problems to manage or sins to confess, this approach sees them as messengers from a battlefield, signals that reveal where we're fighting, what we're fighting for, and ultimately whether we're moving toward God or away from Him. The question isn't whether you should feel angry, afraid, or ashamed. The question is, what are those feelings trying to tell you about your relationship with the divine? When someone cuts you off in traffic, that surge of anger isn't just about driving etiquette. It's about justice, control, and whether the universe operates fairly. When your child doesn't text back, that anxiety questions whether you can trust anyone to protect what you love most. Our emotional landscape operates on three relational movements. People move against us, attack, away from us, abandonment, or toward us, intimacy. When attacked, we fight or flee. When abandoned, we feel jealousy or despair. When someone approaches with genuine kindness, we surprisingly react with contempt or shame. These reactions reveal our expectations of God. Unrighteous anger asks, will God deliver justice, or must I take matters into my own hands? Ungodly fear whispers, can I really trust God to protect me? Jealousy demands, will God satisfy my hunger or leave me empty? We think anger is excessive, something to suppress. But what if most anger is actually too weak, too misdirected? Consider Sarah, whose snake-like voice scattered family members as she criticized Quentin for washing carrots before peeling. Her fury wasn't about kitchen efficiency, it was about control, about never feeling vulnerable. Unrighteous anger intimidates others into compliance, consumes whatever might fill our emptiness, and condemns those in our way. Like a 5-year-old screaming, "Mine," we demand immediate satisfaction. At its core, unrighteous anger hates vulnerability and worships control. But here's the twist. The Bible doesn't condemn anger itself. God gets angry. Righteous anger warns, invites change, and wounds for redemption rather than vengeance. The problem with most anger isn't intensity, but aim. We rage at people when we should be furious at sin, at evil, at death itself. True transformation requires asking, what am I really angry about? And what does my anger reveal about what I believe God will or won't do? Fear emerges when uncertainty about our resources meets genuine danger, when we're overwhelmed and helpless to preserve what we cherish. Death represents our ultimate fear, threatening both physical existence and meaning itself. Most of us construct comfort zones that minimize anxiety. While sometimes protective, these boundaries can imprison us, preventing growth. Fear distorts reality, making us seem weaker while magnifying threats. Unlike anger that blames others, fear turns blame inward, creating an illusory sense of control. The crucial distinction isn't whether we fear, but what we fear. Jesus himself experienced fear in Gethsemane, pleading that this cup be taken from me. Fear isn't inherently sinful. The question is whether it drives us toward self-protection or toward God, our true protector. Fear of the world drives us away from God, but fear of God, recognizing him as creator and judge, strips away all other fears. To fear God means being consumed with his presence, anxious to greet him, building our lives around being his bride. Few emotions feel as petty and shameful as envy. We resent others' success while despising ourselves for caring. In Psalm 73, Asaph confesses his envy toward the prosperous wicked whose lives seem effortlessly successful. Envy distorted his perception, making the wealthy appear superhuman while he felt worthless. Jealousy, envy's aggressive cousin, desperately protects what we possess. King Saul initially loved young David, but grew murderously jealous after hearing people sing, "Saul has slain his thousands and David his tens of thousands." His jealousy became obsessive, leading to repeated murder attempts. What makes envy spiritually dangerous isn't the desire itself, but what it reveals, a refusal to trust God's provision and timing. Yet, paradoxically, God himself is described as jealous. In Exodus, God declares, "The Lord, whose name is jealous, is a jealous God." But divine jealousy protects what rightfully belongs to him, the exclusive relationship between creator and created. God jealously guards us not from insecurity, but from passionate love, like a bridegroom protecting his bride. Despair is jealousy's passive cousin, both triggered by abandonment, but while jealousy fights loss, despair surrenders. It deadens our hearts because hope has become too painful. The spectrum ranges from regret, slight disappointment, to sadness, deeper emptiness, to depression, life-absorbing incapacitation, to despair, complete absence of hope. Most of life is colored by loss. Minor losses heal like paper cuts. Others, dead dreams, broken promises, shattered relationships, leave permanent scars. Psalm 88 stands as scripture's blackest lament, showing someone on the edge of emotional obliteration. As Proverbs states, hope deferred makes the heart sick. Despair represents flight from desire itself, shutting down emotionally because disappointment has answered hope so many times that vulnerability seems absurd. Yet Psalm 88 models honest conversation with God about messy emotions. Paradoxically, despair can open hearts to grasp transcendent hope in God. Ungodly despair flees from desire, but godly despair represents collapse of self-will and surrender to reality we cannot control, a howling prayer seeking not just answers, but God himself. God encounters us in surprising, unpredictable ways, thrilling yet frightening, because we prefer him manageable. When he confronts us with loneliness, silence, and struggle, he reveals his goodness through our suffering. This is the cross's irony: evil transformed into salvation, resurrection through crucifixion. God overturns pain by experiencing it himself. We cannot directly alter our emotions, nor should we escape heartache. Avoiding it is impossible. We're flawed beings in a broken world, and undesirable, because our dark emotions carry redemptive power. Though tainted in expression, our emotions reflect God's character and vocalize our deepest cry. The Bible doesn't promise freedom from suffering. Through pain, we experience joy and encounter glory. God restores us when weak, parents us as a perfect father, and fills our emptiness with tastes of what's to come. Like Abraham and the psalmists, we're pilgrims wandering toward our heavenly homecoming. The invitation isn't to resolve every emotion immediately, but to be overwhelmed by what we cannot control. Your emotions aren't problems to solve. They're invitations to deeper conversation with your Maker. The anger, fear, jealousy, despair, contempt, and shame you feel aren't signs of weak faith, but opportunities for brutal honesty before God. Bring them directly to him, especially when they sound like accusations. In that raw wrestling, you'll discover who he really is.